This episode is brought to you by Mountain Sea Media. I spent half my life near the Pacific Ocean and the other half in the mountains of Central Oregon. These places are full of profound stories and experiences that guide my life, even now as a media creator and a beer professional. This is how Mountain Sea Media was born. I realized how impactful stories are to our lives and business. Stories share good experiences and the warmth of friends. They improve business by sharing these experiences and connecting deeply with our customers. If you'd like to connect better with your customers through copywriting and storytelling, contact me at jeremy@mountainseamedia.com. It's your story. I'll help you tell it. Welcome to episode 34 of Good Beer Matters.
Beer doesn't have to be the be-all, end-all. That there's so much more happening because of beer, but outside of the glass of beer itself. The only way that we can all be better drinkers is to have a good base level of knowledge. Yeah, I get to travel the world and travel the country and drink good beer and hang out with good people. And like I say, it's kind of a charmed life.
Beer writers have the semi-glamorous and sometimes inglorious honor of traveling to various places to taste a lot of really good and really bad beer. This is all to inform and entertain the rest of us. They're responsible for mundane beer reviews, technical essays on the next industry-changing gadget, as well as inspiring stories of travel, adventure, and flavor. But every once in a while, a beer writer takes a swig and then puts pen to paper, which truly opens the reader's worldview. My next guest is a beer writer, editor, and podcast host who not only informs his readers, but takes them on a journey through the experiences and the philosophical realm of what beer can be. In this episode, he explores the what and the why of beer, and even discusses the three most dangerous words found in beer writing. My name is Jeremy. I'm a certified Cicerone, BJCP judge, IBD certified brewer, and a beer writer. I believe the art, the science, and the culture of beer has more of a profound effect on us than we realize. I believe there's a world of wisdom found in every glass, and I intend to get to the bottom of it. This is Good Beer Matters. These are the stories of us, of great food and the beer that brings it all together. I hope you enjoy episode 34 of Good Beer Matters with author, editor, and podcast host, John Hall.
Good afternoon to you.
Yeah.
Is that right? It's kind of hard to keep track sometimes since I just had breakfast, so.
It's all good.
It's all good. How are you doing?
Really well. You know, just we're closing out the magazine today, so it's the last last home stretch of getting coverage together and some final articles and stuff. But aside from that, yeah, no, everything's good.
So
how about with you?
Well, everything's good. I'm sorry. Let me back up. You made a comment. You're closing up a magazine, meaning you're finishing up
an issue.
Okay, not like another one bites the dust type of closing up a magazine.
No, nothing like that.
Okay, good. I've heard too many stories of that happening, and it makes me a bit sad, to be honest. But
yeah, no, I'm with you on that.
John Hall, thank you very much for coming on to my Good Beer Matters podcast. It's really, really great to have you.
It's great to be here. Thanks so much, and I dig the premise because good beer does matter.
I thought of all people, you would be right there with me. In fact, you and I both have a similar, I don't want to say tagline or something, but with some of the stuff that you've written, you talk about getting to the bottom of each pint, and I kind of have that too. And, the whole reason behind that is, and I tell this to people all the time, is that, you know, a glass of beer is a wonderful thing, but beer is so much more than just that simple glass of beer. I tell people it's like Neo in the Matrix or Alice in Wonderland. You stick your head down the rabbit hole and it just gets larger and larger, the deeper you go.
That's absolutely true. Yeah, it's fun to explore, and you know, it opens up so many new avenues, not just, you know, flavors, but you know, the people that you meet and the new experiences that you're exposed to, or the places that you get to go and travel to. It's a fun, dynamic beverage. And as a journalist who's been covering this industry for, gosh, 15 years now, I feel really fortunate to do what I do.
Well, we're definitely going to dive into that. That's a large reason why I wanted to talk to you specifically. But you have written books. You are senior editor of Craft Beer and Brewing. You've been writing you've been writing for pretty much your entire career, to my knowledge, and in the past, decade or so, from what my research, it's been pretty much about beer. Will you give us a background of your history in the beer world?
Sure. It started off, I think my first beer article was something back in 2003 or thereabouts. And, you know, it's funny going back and looking at that recently, because I was using terms like, you know, microbreweries, and, you know, nobody had ever heard of a hazy IPA. You know, that wasn't a flaw at that point. And, you know, I think I made reference to something like, you know, of the 800 breweries operating in the country, and everything seemed so much more quaint back then as it were, compared with today. But, you know, from there I started writing. I did a few books, and then I was asked in 2013 to become the editor of All About Beer magazine, which was a great honor. That magazine was founded in 1979, and I stayed there for 5 years, and unfortunately had to leave because the guy who came in and bought the company just ran it into the ground. And unfortunately, the magazine is no more. He filed for bankruptcy earlier this year. But you know, during that time, I wrote a few other books, and now I'm over at Craft Beer and Brewing magazine, which is thankfully doing really well, you know, because people do like beer media, and they like to support beer media. And so I've been fortunate to be here for the last 2 years. And, yeah, I get to travel the world and travel the country and drink good beer and hang out with good people. And it's, like I say, it's kind of a charmed life.
Well, you seem like you have a charmed life. Look at your Instagram page, and almost all of it is just about wonderful beer or something about the beer world.
But you know, don't ever judge somebody based on their Instagram page. I mean, that is exactly what I want you to see.
Exactly.
I remember years ago when the American Craft Beer Cookbook came out. And I was on a book tour for, God, I don't know, 8 months or so. And I was home in between. But there was one morning that I was in Seattle, and I had judged a beer competition the night before. And there had been a fancy food show or something in town that I had gone to sign some books. And the next morning I had to be up to work on the magazine, but then also to do a radio interview with a station in Virginia. So I think I was up at something like 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'm sitting in this La Quinta Inn where I can't open up the windows because on the other side of the window is another building that it was an office building where people could see into the room. And I'm in my pajamas and I'm hungover and I'm eating olives out of a bag that I got from the fancy food show the night before, and I'm on the phone with the radio station in Virginia, and they're saying to me, boy, you know, your job is so glamorous, and who has it better than you? And I said to myself, God, like, if you could see me right now in this disheveled state eating olives out of a bag, you would sing a different tune. So that's what I mean when it comes to the Instagram stuff. It's a lot of fun, but don't ever believe that anybody's life is that cool.
Well,
certainly not mine.
And I feel like I have a glimpse into that world just with a lot of the stuff that I do. And while I don't believe that you are crushing Coors Banquet and corn dogs when you're not on Instagram, you still have had the opportunity to travel to and taste some or travel to extraordinary countries and taste some extraordinary beer. So I'd like to think that your Instagram page is just a highlight reel of some of the cool things you've gotten to do, right?
Absolutely. And I was just drinking Banquet the other night, actually. I had some of it here at the house, and We were sitting on the back patio and knocking them back. So it's a fine beer. It's a fun beer.
You know, it's funny. I've recently been sitting with a friend, a level four master beer judge, and just really diving into the beer styles in more depth and just to really up my beer style game. And of course, we're covering style category 1B and going over, you know, Bud and Coors. And that's, it was there. Oh, and consequently, we got into category 2, and that's where we're getting to the international versions. But we were comparing the light beers along with Coors Banquet, along with Corona and Heineken, all of it from a can because we wanted to have it as best as it could be. And I was really surprised. The term I'm going to choose to use this time is how inoffensive the Coors Banquet was compared to the others.
Sure.
But the grand surprise out of all of them was how smooth, how consistent, and how, I'm going to say it on air, how delightful that Heineken was from a can. All of us beer snobs tend to stick our pinkies out and our noses in the air at some of those beers, but there is a time and place.
100%. And fresh Heineken is really quite a marvel in the glass. And, you know, I've been fortunate to drink it fresh at the brewery and fresh at some bars as well. And it's, if anytime you can get your hands on some unskunked Heineken, you should be lining up for that.
Oh yeah, and Ed, I think my listeners may have heard this story before, but I'll be brief on this one. But I'm sure you've had many beer epiphanies in your time, and I certainly have had a few. One of them was sitting on a train going from Barcelona to Madrid, and the best beer option I had available to me on this train was a Heineken. Luckily, it was out of a can, but you know they have a Heineken division in Spain, so it was a fairly fresh beer, and it was marvelous.
Mm-hmm.
And it was wonderful.
Cool.
I also want to talk about, you know, you mentioned you've written for newspapers and magazines and online magazines, and you've written books, but you also are a host of a podcast. And if you read the Instagram page a little too fast, it looks like Stealth is Beer, but it's Still This Beer.
It is.
What's the premise of that?
So we've been doing that podcast for 4 years now, and it's myself and Augie Carton, who runs Carton Brewing here in New Jersey where I live. And he and I would get together at the bars and you know, we'd trade beers back and forth. And we started to realize that we were having fun conversations based on not just what we expected the beer to be, but how it was in that particular moment. And, you know, was this the right place where we should be drinking the beer and all of that. And so the premise of the show is a guest comes on. And it can be a brewing guest, it can be a, you know, a writer. We've had all sorts of folks on in the last 4 years. We've never missed a week of doing a new episode. And they bring on two beers, and we don't know what they are. Myself and Augie don't know what they are. And they're served to us in black glasses. So we can't see foam, we can't see color, we can't see carbonation. So all we're really going off of is aroma and taste. And the only rule that we have for the brewer guest is that they can't bring one of their own beers. It has to be, you know, somebody else's beer. And we've had some really fun discussions based on the beers. And when you really don't know what something is and you really are doing something blind, it can change the very nature of how you're perceiving a beer. There's one memorable episode that a lot of folks bring up to us where we thought we were drinking a milk stout. And instead, it turned out that we were drinking a Pilsner. And it just had this residual sweetness to it. And we could have sworn that we were just getting lactose. And, you know, so it's a fun thing to do. And then we write the sentence about every beer, meaning, you know, like, where do we think that this beer would be the ideal place for us to have it? And it's just, it's been a fun show. And we have a couple of regular listeners. So if anybody hasn't heard it before and they want to check in on us, it's Steal This Beer. So it's a lot of fun to do.
It's a very humorous show as well as kind of enlightening. It just kind of, it's interesting to see that process. But of course, there's lots of banter that goes on back and forth too, which is kind of
a little bit.
You know, a little bit, you know. But that's an interesting premise about, one of the concepts that I've spoken about is about, people talk about terroir, especially with wine, but in part with beer as well. But I find that there's a concept called internal terroir, and I think you guys are heavy into that by closing off the majority of your senses and relying on aroma and taste only. That mm-hmm. that kind of forces you, it forces you to interpret the situation out of context. And yeah. So that's how you can get, okay, I've got residual sweetness. Is that a stout? No, it's actually a Pilsner. I was way off. But just having those, contextual clues, it just goes to show how important your internal mindset is, as well as the clues of visual and just kind of an understanding of the beer. And I think that speaks to the more you understand, the more you are aware of it, the greater the experience can become.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with you on that.
One last question too about that Steal This Beer. Who is that podcast geared toward? I mean, who is your ideal audience when you put that out?
Oh, unemployed day drinkers.
Unemployed day drinkers, love it. Okay.
I don't try to put things like that into buckets. Okay. I think that if you're interested in beer. We have folks who are interested in flavor or sensory. We try to have a good time with it. And so, it's the same way that you can watch a TV show, like a cooking show, and you can have all sorts of different backgrounds. I don't think we're trying to appeal to any one set of people. Do you like beer? Are you interested in this concept? Cool. We're here for you. If not, cool. We'll be here. You change your mind.
So it's kind of like a daytime talk show, but this time it's with knowledgeable beer folk talking about beer.
Sure.
Great. Will you tell us a little bit about craft beer in brewing? I know that that has it's a online and published publication of some note. Will you tell us a little bit about craft beer and brewing?
Sure. It's magazine comes out every 2 months, and we're updating on the website daily. And it's all about the cross section between being a beer enthusiast, a home brewer, and a professional brewer as well. So we cover all sorts of different topics. From this issue that we're working on right now is all about lagers and sours, and so sort of going a little bit deeper and how can we all be better drinkers, and what should we be looking for. When we're exploring recipes and flavors and everything else in between. And sometimes there's some travel stuff in there and some food things mixed in. And overall, it's for beer enthusiasts, for people who like to make and drink great beer.
Yeah, and from looking through the website, of course, I mean, it seems, when people always say, this is good for beginners and experts alike, you always get a little skeptical because how could it be? But Craft Beer Brewing seems to be that publication where it'll talk a little bit about basically beer perspectives of just like understanding lagers or a little bit of travel, I don't want to say fluff stories, but just stories of interest. But for a home brewer or a professional brewer who needs to learn a little bit more about this technique, or I want to get into, cask ales, for example, that seems to be a resource for those experts as well. So do you guys intentionally try to appeal to the beer interested, to the beer professional?
I think so. Yeah. Because, the beer professionals are always still trying to learn as well, and they like having the conversations with other brewers. And so we sort of take the guesswork out of that sometimes on certain topics by going right to knowledgeable brewers and asking them hopefully smart questions and getting some good answers out of them. And then when we do that, the pro brewers, they seem to enjoy our coverage.
And so this is just basically a place to go for additional higher and even lower learning of beer, not to say lower in a negative sense, but just like, okay, here are the basics all the way up to here's the minutia.
Yeah, I would think so. And, you know, because the only way that we can all be better drinkers is to have, you know, a good base level of knowledge, and then we can choose to go however much deeper, you know, we want to. And so, you know, as a writer, I try to never assume that anybody knows, you know, what we're talking about from the get-go, because there's always so much more, you know, there's a lot to take in. And I'm always learning myself. I'm always trying to expand my own horizons, but I don't always necessarily know the topic that I'm writing about when I start writing about it. So I need to ask these beginner questions as well. And if I'm doing that, I'm going to assume that there's folks who want to read about that as well. And then as you dive deeper and deeper and deeper, yeah, there's great resources out there for you.
Yeah. Well, and so reading a bunch of the articles that you've written, especially articles that you have obviously would have edited for this publication, we really get into, like we just said, you get into the technical, we get into the tasting, we get into some travel pieces. One of the things I want to ask you, I know you're comfortable talking about sensory. I know you're comfortable talking about process and ingredients, but the part of understanding the beer world is just really diving into the romantic notion of beer travel. And some of my inspirations, and I'm sure you'd be the same way, but, you know, reading Anthony Bourdain's book, Kitchen Confidential, and even watching a show, I remember watching shows, The Booze Traveler, and one of my favorites on Discovery Channel back in the day was Dahani Tackles the Globe. Do you remember that show?
I don't.
And
actually,
so he was a professional football player who during the off season would go travel around the world. And he would spend a week or two in a different country where he would learn and train, and then at the end of the show, compete in their national sport. But along the way, he's teaching you about or showing you the culture and the mindset. And it was just a fantastic, very niche perspective on different cultures just by looking at through their particular sport. And,
oh, cool.
And just the premise of it just still to this day just blows my mind, because I feel like we could do the exact same thing by looking at a culture's beer.
Sure. I would agree with you on that.
Well, and what I was hoping to hear is, and I know you've traveled, I know you've gone and written about and done competition to other places. What is the purpose of? I'm sorry, not the purpose, but what is the value of traveling to different cultures and kind of looking at a culture based upon their beer?
You know, it's a fun question to consider. It's a fun question to consider. For me, I think the world is a really big place, but it's also a very small place. And so I think for some travelers, you know, there's this mindset of a little bit adventurous, but then also a lot of comfort as well. And so, you know, if you're traveling and you're taking a bus tour somewhere, you're really only seeing what people want you to see. You know, if you're going you're going on a cruise, you know, you're going to see maybe some new countries, but you're only going to see the parts of it that are convenient to see. You know, if you're traveling throughout Europe and you know, you're worried about the type of you're not an adventurous eater, you know, you can find a McDonald's and that tastes like home. And for me, that's, you know, I if that's the way that somebody wants to travel, like, that's fine. That's not the way that I choose to travel. And what I found is beer is a common language. So I can be in a foreign country, or I could be traveling somewhere, you know, even in the U.S. And if I go into a brewery, if I find a really good beer bar where, you know, beer is front and center, I'm going to find people who I have at least one thing in common with. And from there, I can get travel recommendations or, you know, restaurant suggestions or, you know, have a better understanding of place. Because I might be the traveler who comes into this local brewery and sits down, or this local beer bar and sits down. But for the most part, probably the people who are around me are locals. and they're just having a Tuesday afternoon or a Tuesday evening or a Saturday afternoon, whatever, you know, and it's special for me, but it's ordinary for them. And it's a really cool way to experience what life is in that particular place. And so, you know, travel for me is a real privilege when it comes down to that, to be able to try to immerse myself in as authentic an experience as possible. And it doesn't have to be, you know, anything that is super memorable or, oh my gosh, it's the best night of my life or anything along those lines. There's beauty in the everyday. There's a lot of satisfaction that comes in the ordinary, as it were. And, you know, when you consider beer in that way as just sort of an everyday part of life, for so many people, you inserting yourself into a different situation. Yeah, that's really special and it's really a lot of fun. But, I think it's for me, it's been a great way to experience various cultures around the world while still staying rooted in something that is you know, familiar to me.
And it seems very much you used it. It's like it's everyone speaks the same language. It seems to me that when traveling, even to different parts of our own state, our own country, but especially abroad, it seems like we are speaking the same language of beer, but everyone has their own dialect. And the interesting thing of, like you mentioned, finding comfort in, okay, I'm going to sit at this pub and have a beer because that's what I like to do. But to notice the different dialects of culture of the beer experience, we may love our Coors Banquet like you and I talked about before. Meanwhile, in the Netherlands, they love their Heineken, or we go to some place and have a Baltic Porter, for example, and it's just in having those different experiences and seeing how the people approach their fellowship. That's the part I find interesting, just that contrast of the similarities and the differences.
Sure. Yeah, no, I agree with you.
When you travel, and you kind of alluded to this before, I wanted to kind of circle around this a little bit, is you know, anyone can go to the usual hot spots and just be a tourist and just kind of skim over, you know, what the Instagram of the travel world. This is what we want to show you. If you go to Barcelona, you look at the Sagrada Familia in Park Güell and go have some paella and then leave and move on to the next place. What's the value of finding those back pubs where the locals go? How does that experience change from the beer tourism to the authentic cultural beer experience?
You know, I really just think that it comes down to, you know, if everybody's all going to one place, you know, they're going to have that experience. But, you know, walking off of a beaten path a little bit opens up new avenues. And, you know, if you can, you know, sit in a place where you're the only one who doesn't speak the language, you know, where there isn't a menu in English, where there isn't, you know, any of the trappings and comforts of home, I think that it does make for just a, you know, a deeper, probably more meaningful experience, you know, one that you'll remember for quite a while.
What have been some of your favorite places that you've discovered?
Oh man, that's a hard one. It's a pretty long list.
Yeah, I bet.
As it were. You know, I really enjoyed exploring the growing beer scene in Greece when I was there a couple of years ago. Every time I get down to South America, you know, there's always, you know, depending on what country I'm in, there's always just something new to explore, and their beer scene is really so vibrant and really continues to just grow by leaps and bounds. You know, but you know, it's also just a lot of fun to go back to London. I try to get there at least once a year, and revisiting some of my old familiar haunts, and then asking for recommendations on new spots as well, because you know, it's always growing, and you know, a chance to drink proper cask ale when I can find it is always a welcome thing. So yeah, those are just a few that sort of pop out in my mind right off the bat. But you know, I also just I like exploring around the U.S. I like exploring around my home state of New Jersey as well to, you know, see what's happening here and you know, remember what's happening in my backyard. You don't have to travel far for new experiences, especially when it comes to beer.
Well, that's a wonderful segue. Thank you for bringing that up. You know, you and I first met at a beer competition in Bend, Oregon, And we had a brief conversation since then. Next time you come back to this general area, I urge you to reach out to me. There's a new real ale, cask ale only brewery that has opened up probably 30 minutes from here. And they, you know, I've never had cask ale in England, but from my understanding, this brewery seems absolutely legit. And I've had a few conversations with the brewer, and he's trying to do everything as legitimate as possible, and even trying to get a nod from camera to be a part of that thing as well. So, next time you're in Bend and in hop country, then I'd love to take you to go have a real ale. It's hard to find.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
One of the other things I have to tell, I have to ask you is just because I also write and love to tell stories, but you're essentially a professional storyteller, and you know, sometimes you'll get into technical writing within beer, but you know, you have a way of turning it into a story and keeping someone's interest. What makes a good story?
I think there's good stories everywhere. For me, when I'm looking at the beer world, I don't necessarily need to find what's new or what's exciting or, why people are lining up at 5 o'clock in the morning for a special can release or anything like that. A good story for me really starts with talking with folks, and saying, so what are you working on right now? And it's a very simple question, but wherever the person decides to go with that answer is usually something that's very meaningful for them and probably something that they're going to be very passionate about at that given time. And so, that's a fun way for me to start looking around for stories and story ideas. Going just a little bit deeper, I think that a good story also when you hear it. And if somebody says to me, I'm working on X, or boy, I just found this new ingredient that I'm going to try in a style of beer. And if I find myself doing something just like, huh, that's interesting, and it's not a wow, it's just a huh. That to me is sort of an indication that there might be something there. Mm-hmm. And that it's worth following down the rabbit hole a little bit. And usually it pays off. Not always, but usually.
Well, and you being a writer and me being a writer, obviously not to the success and the path that you've had, but nonetheless, I think the similarity I'm trying to draw from there is I'm willing to bet you a beer that you and I are fascinated by a great many things, just looking at things a little bit, maybe more deeply, a little bit more closely, and finding those interesting stories that make me go, huh. But there's a difference between acknowledging that and being able to retell that story to those people who aren't as fascinated about a great many things, but keeping their interest. What's your take on how to recognize a story, but how do you tell the story to appeal to more people?
Boy, well, now we're just getting into writing theory at this point, which is, I don't know if there's enough time for something like this, but I think it is, again, understanding who your audience is and what they're going to be interested in. And so for me, it comes down to a lot of the time, you don't have to be super geeky about it, and you don't have to be super inside baseball or, pretending like you know more than you actually do. It can really just be a simple conversation of, remember the, who, what, when, why, where, and how, the simple writing, the tenets of a good story in journalism, as it were. So, I think if you can find a good sense of place when you're writing, if you can paint the scene for people, if you can describe flavors of beer in a way that is approachable to people, that they're going to leave with a better sense and understanding of the people that you're writing about. Now, the writing that I find really boring in beer is this first person blogging type navel gazing stuff where the writer can't but use the first person all the time. You know, I went to this brewery, I tasted this, and it's more of just, you know, trying to show how cool they think they are, mm-hmm. As opposed to actually telling the story of the place where they are. That to me isn't as valuable, those stories. You know, the ones where, you know, you forget that somebody wrote this and you're sort of immersed in the world of the subject at hand. That to me is much more valuable.
And that's a good point. I'm going to go back to that show that I fell in love with, Dahani Tackles the Globe. You know, here's a guy who was a professional football player, played with the Cincinnati Bengals, and just became a traveler. John, you'd like him. He also had a bow tie business.
So
he was kind of an entrepreneur on the side and used his whatever renown that he had from football, he used that to his full advantage. And so the show, here's this guy who's just, I mean, he's just a huge NFL football player, but he humbles himself because, you know, there are episodes when he goes to Nepal and goes trekking up to Everest Base Camp, and he said that was the hardest thing he's ever done in his life. And, of course, I played water polo back in the day, and he goes to Croatia to play water polo and just gets schooled left and right. So he doesn't come across as, I did this, I did that. It was, as you're saying, it's not about that blogger. Wasn't Dahani didn't really go in and say, look how I'm going to dominate the sport because I'm an American football player. It was just the humility of, I'm really not a part of this. I'm just a guide, but I want to show you this experience. And you said, I want to paint this picture. I want to show you, not tell you. That's the writing that I love, the shows that I love, and that's what I try and emulate in my own work, probably to a greater or lesser degree of success, depending on who you ask.
Cool.
This will be another nice little segue, because you talk about knowing your audience and showing, not telling, but you wrote a nice little book called Drink Beer and Think Beer, and I loved it because it got into the... not a tremendous minutia of detail about the beer world, but it got into the process, ingredients. You talked about tasting. I mean, you covered quite a gamut of things, but you also dipped into culture, ethics, and you kind of covered a lot of ground in this book. Can you talk a little bit about why you wrote that book and who you wrote it for?
Yeah, I wrote it for all of us. I wrote it as a reminder, you know, that beer is an approachable beverage. It's universal, and that, you know, as much as sometimes, you know, the geek culture that surrounds it, especially with the craft movement these days, is, I don't know, maybe the most vocal, that it really is just a simple, humble beverage in a lot of ways, and that there's, you know, especially when it comes to craft, craft is only about 13% of the overall beer marketplace in the mm-hmm. U.S. these days. And so, you know, there's 87% of people who, you know, are still not drinking craft beer. And that's fine. But I think that for a lot of those folks, it's because they find it a little intimidating and they find it a little, you know, out of reach, or, you know, they've been told that it's, you know, for a certain set of people, a younger generation or, you know, a discerning type, and that it's not as approachable as, say, some of the American light lagers that have dominated the landscape in the last couple of years, or last couple of decades, I should say. So I wrote this book really to, you know, remind folks of, you know, where beer is, and that beer doesn't have to be the be all end all, that there's so much more happening, because of beer, but outside of the glass of beer itself. And so from the way that it's marketed to us, to the way that it stimulates economies, to the way that it brings people together, to all of these various things, I wanted to get into that. And that's what I hope the book accomplishes.
Well, I can't speak for everyone, but it accomplished that with me, just from the standpoint of I feel the same way. I feel like I could have written a similar book just because of the way I feel about beer. And of course, every chapter you're making a point. It was like, yeah, yes, yes, yes. You even talk about You even get into the ethics of women in the brewing world, and the fact that you have a daughter, and you hope that things get better by the time she gets old enough. I certainly have a daughter who is developing quite a palate, especially for an 11-year-old. And I think those same things, that she may end up in a field where sensory is important. It may be beer, maybe food, who knows, but I don't want to sit back and just watch things happen and hope for the best. I want to help educate people on the world and the fascination, the technique, the education of beer, as well as the context, the culture, and hopefully make things better by the time my daughter and your daughter come of age where they enter that culture. And I feel like you gave us a very good glimpse of that world just with this one book.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that.
My pleasure. Thank you for writing the book, and we'll definitely have a link to it in the show notes on this.
Cool.
But you've spent a lot of time with beer. You've spent a lot of time tasting beer and thinking about drinking beer, thinking beer. No pun intended. But you see what I did there. After all this time, John, what still excites you about beer and the beer culture?
That it's continuously evolving, and that everything old is new again. And I know that those are two very different things, but there's so much left to explore when it comes to raw ingredients, and when it comes to fermentation, and when it comes to practice. And execution. And the cool thing that I see from brewers all the time is, here's something that's been done for a millennia. And here's a product and a beverage that has just been part of the human experience. But a new brewery could open tomorrow, and a guy could be mashing in for the first time, and he might say to himself, well, I know I'm supposed to do it this way, but I wonder if ... And then he goes down this new rabbit hole and maybe discovers something new and exciting. Maybe he doesn't, or maybe they don't, but maybe they do. And that's the cool thing, is that all of the brewers are continuously trying to push the envelope. They're walking through markets and they're seeing, an exotic fruit or vegetable that they had never seen before. They're at a restaurant and they're tasting something that is new to them. And now they're thinking about how they can incorporate that ingredient or those flavors into a beer, and do it in a way that's going to be appealing to people. To that nothing, everything old is new again as well, is that, lagers never really went anywhere. Bud Light is the best selling beer in the country, and Coors Light's number two, Miller Light's number three, Bud Heavy's number four. Lagers and pilsners rule the beer landscape. But in the craft space, there's a lot of brewers who are starting to come back now and say, let's try our hand at making some of these beers, which are very, very difficult to execute well and without off flavors. And so they're doing that. And we're getting more fresh, flavorful local lagers than I think any other time in America's history right now. And that's a beautiful thing. It's a wonderful thing, because the brewers are, not just saying, okay, we're going to take, Skittles or chicken parmesan sandwiches or, marshmallow peeps or whatever and throw it into a mash. They're saying, like, let's just make a traditional four-ingredient beer that is crystal clear and all of the ingredients work in harmony, and it's just refreshing to drink pint after pint after pint after pint. And that's a really fun thing, and I'd like to see more of that. But that's what gets me excited about beer, is that there is there's so much left to explore, and there's old ground to retread, and maybe find new pathways off of, or to just walk on the paths of others. I remind brewers all the time that this is a really cool industry for me to cover. And it's a cool industry for them to be in. I mean, they are standing on the shoulders of giants. They're standing on the shoulders of brewers who created the porter and the stout and the saison and the IPA and all of the various IPAs. And what will they contribute? One day when somebody stands on their shoulders, what will it be for? And that's a heavy thing to consider, but it's, I think the brewers who take that to heart, and there's quite a few are really the ones who will lead the way for the next generation.
And I think it's really fun and exciting to see all this crazy innovation. But if we were talking about pizza, I'm not really excited about seeing the evolution of a broccoli, salmon, and Gouda pizza. Sometimes I just want a good old fashioned pepperoni and just a really good British bitter or a good IPA. And so maybe I'm just getting older, but sometimes just the traditions or, you know, it was good then, it's good now. I don't want that to go away. And so I'm encouraged to hear you and other people I've talked to say that what's old is new again. And in this brewery near where I live, bringing back a really true, really real ale is just encouraging to see that, you know, it's not about this innovation for innovation's sake. It's let's remember where we came from. Sometimes you want to put Led Zeppelin on the stereo and just rock out.
Agreed.
Yeah. So given all this, where do you hope and where do you see the culture of beer in the next 10, 20 years?
Oh, man, if I knew the answer to that, I'd be in a different line of work. you know, I think that as long as people continue to innovate, as long as they don't lose the desire to innovate, that's going to be a great thing for us. And I think, you know, drinkers should have reasonable expectations. You know, the three most dangerous words in beer, and this has been told to me by a guy in sales that I really trust, but the three most dangerous words are new, rare, and local. And, you know, there's a bunch of people who will just try to chase, you know, the new beers that are out there, and that's all they're going to drink. Or the people who just try to chase the rare, or who will only drink, you know, local beer, which is fine to support your local economy, but, you know, they're not getting out of comfort zones when it comes to any of that. So, you know, going back and remembering, you know, why Sierra Nevada Pale Ale was so great if you haven't had one for a while or if you've never had one, or, you know, having the same beer two rounds in a row is, you know, it's pretty crazy. You don't always have to have a new beer every time you go to a beer bar. So my hope is really that that the drinkers, you know, that we the drinkers, you know, can branch out of what we see as the beer norms these days, and you know, go back to some more traditional methods of drinking.
I like it. It sounds like kind of what we just talked about is like, you know, all the new stuff is fun, but don't forget what brought you here and what you enjoyed for decades.
100%.
Yeah. So I'm going to begin our kind of a wind down series of questions. But the next question I have for you is if you were able to be the king of beer for an entire day, what would you change?
Nothing, but I'd throw a hell of a party.
What would you serve at this party?
a ton of British pale ales, some good foreign extra stouts, and liters of Helles.
That sounds jolly good.
Yeah.
So if you had the opportunity to choose your very last meal and your very last beer before you depart this earth, what would they be?
Oh, well, so I grew up in New Jersey, and there is a place called Town Hall Deli, and it's a true, proper delicatessen, and they do a sandwich that's called a Sloppy Joe. And now most people are going to hear that, and they're going to think of it's going to be a ground beef and tomato sauce and, you know, served on a hamburger bun. This is not that sandwich. This is a cold deli meat sandwich with two types of meat, Swiss cheese, topped with coleslaw and Russian dressing and served on very thinly sliced rye bread. And it is my favorite sandwich on the planet. And so that would be my last meal. And I think I would probably pair it with either a nice 20-ounce glass of either Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, or I might go for a Pilsner or Kell, depending on the mood that I'm in, or even a beer stout out of Denver, their Helles. Or maybe all three.
Well, that's funny because most of my guests are stumped by this question at first, and then they come up with an answer. Sounds like you've considered this before.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, you know, death is my central preoccupation.
Or at least avoiding it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, the way that I live, it's inevitable.
Well, yeah. Okay, last big question before we go some easy ones.
Okay.
With all of your experience and, you know, obviously everything we've talked about and more, in your opinion, why does good beer matter?
Why does good beer matter? Because it shows skill. It shows our desire to not settle for the status quo, to not settle for something that is less than, to continuously... you know, seek out real flavor and beers that are made with skill, and knowing that where our dollars go when we open up our wallets, knowing that money is going to go towards a worthy enterprise that is not only going to benefit us in the short term, but benefit good people in the long.
Great. I agree with all that.
Okay.
Just so you know. okay, so if any listeners want to either connect with you or learn more about what you do, where could they go to connect?
Oh, sure. It's pretty easy. So I'm at johnhall.com. It's J-O-H-N-H-O-L-L. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm usually at the local bar. So, it's easy to find me and connect with me in any number of ways. And it's always great to hear from folks, and I always try to respond to every email that I get or every question that I get as quickly as possible. So, feel free to reach out, and you know, certainly go to beerandbrewing.com for the magazine, and you can subscribe to the print edition of the magazine there, and you know, go to Steal This Beer and download the podcast and listen to that. You know, after they're done listening to your latest episode, Dial Ours Up.
Yeah, I will have links to all of this stuff. And lastly, do you have any final words of wisdom before we depart?
Oh, you know, never miss up the opportunity to have one more beer at the hotel bar.
That is, I wish we had time to unpack that, but that is such wonderful, wonderful advice. And has so many connotations to that we may have to discuss that over a beer at some point, but that is brilliant.
Wonderful. Looking forward to it.
Awesome. Hey, John Hall, thank you so much for being a part of the Good Beer Matters podcast, and we appreciate it very much. We look forward to talking to you again.
It was a real pleasure being on with you. Thanks for making the time. I appreciate it.
Likewise. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
In his book, Drink Beer, Think Beer, John Hall not only provides an insider's view into the beer industry, but opens up a window to the world and to ourselves. I urge every professional and every enthusiast to read it and explore what beer can teach us. Join us in the next episode where we visit with the man who pioneered the craft beer movement with a pale ale that inspired generations. Good Beer Matters is a show about great beer, great friends, and the experiences we create together. But it's also about better appreciation of the beer you enjoy. I believe better education leads to better enjoyment. So if you're a beer and food professional or even a beer enthusiast, then please subscribe to Good Beer Matters and visit me at goodbeermatters.net. After that, grab a beer, hang out with friends, and let the world open up. Thank you for listening. Cheers.